The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
Welcome to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I'm Brad Bannon. I'm a national democratic strategist and pollster, a columnist for The Hill in Washington, DC, and a political analyst for News Radio KNX in Los Angeles. My company, Bannon Communications Research, polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democrats. Mondays on Deadline DC, I talk to the people and players behind the politics and policies that lead our great nation forward. Joining me today on the show, as usual, is our intrepid executive producer, Mark Grimaldi, who keeps the trains running on time and the show online. We have a couple of great guests today. In the first half hour, Mika Solna, who is a congressional reporter for Punch Bowl News, joins us to talk about the GOP majority in the House of Representatives and the passage of the big foreign aid bill that sent military aid to Ukraine and Israel. Then in the second half hour, Kimberly Scott, the publisher of DemList, joins us to discuss the plans for the Democratic National Convention in Chicago this summer and to discuss presidential politics. Before we get to our first guest, though, we're going to play a couple of jokes from Colin Jost, who was the host of the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
But before I begin tonight, can we just acknowledge how refreshing it is to see a president of the United States at an event that doesn't begin with a bailiff saying, "All rise." And I would like to point out, it's after 10 p.m. Sleepy Joe is still awake. While Donald Trump has spent the past week falling asleep in court every morning. The candidate, who is a famous New York City playboy, took abortion rights away. And the guy who's trying to give you your abortion rights back is an 80-year-old Catholic. How does that make sense? I'm not saying both candidates are old, but you know Jimmy Carter is out there thinking, I could maybe win this thing.
That was Colin Jost, the host of the this year's White House Correspondents' Dinner. Our guest in this half hour is Mika Solna, who is a congressional reporter for Punch Bowl News and covers the House of Representatives. Mika, thanks for joining us today. We always appreciate it, especially when Congress is in session, as it is back in session as in today. Let's start. Why is the White House Correspondents' Dinner such a big deal?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as we heard, I think a lot of the times, like this dinner, it really kind of highlights the times. I think you kind of heard that in the jokes that you just played, playing up, and especially in an on year, you know, in an election year, I think that it just kind of implements, you know, what's going on. We have two candidates who are, you know, a little older. And, you know, I think that it is very interesting just to see, like, you know, how reflective they are of the country.
Okay. Moving on to bigger and to better things. Let's talk about the House. Last week or so, the House finally passed a big foreign aid package that contained military assistance to Ukraine, to Israel and Taiwan. Also included a warning to TikTok to sell the company to a domestic owner within the next 9 months, I believe. First of all, Could you tell our viewers and listeners what was in that package and why it was so important that the House passed it and then the Senate and signed by the president?
Yeah, so of course we saw the drama leading up to the passage of this massive foreign aid bill that covers aid for Israel, aid for Ukraine, about $60 billion for Ukraine in there, and then aid for the Indo-Pacific as well, so that's clearly Taiwan. And, you know, to appease more votes, they also attached a what would result in a potential ban on TikTok as well as part of the bill. So it was very expansive. It was wide sweeping, and it was a long fight on Capitol Hill leading up to its passage in the House and then the Senate, of course, and then signed very immediately by the president.
Hey, now, if I'm mistaken, please correct me. I usually am. A bill passed the House, but I believe a majority of Republicans voted against the bill. Is that true?
So the House started with taking, they took individual votes on the foreign aid package when it comes to, you know, the aid packages for each area. I mean, we saw the most opposition come against Ukraine. I don't think that's a surprise. I think that a lot of House Republicans have been really vocal in their opposition to Ukraine, you know, to the detriment of in the position that it put the Speaker Johnson. But we also saw a lot of these House conservatives vote against all of them, whether that's Taiwan or Israel. And I think that a lot of members gave their own reasoning behind it. But yeah, we did see a big pushback here for the Speaker and leadership, and then a lot of opposition to these aid bills.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I think is interesting about that vote is Speaker Mike Johnson. He shepherded the bill through the House despite the opposition of many of the members of the Republican caucus. I believe he had voted against the Ukraine bill before he was Speaker. And I'm not a big fan of Mike Johnson, as my listeners and viewers know, but I thought it was a big deal, and, you know, showed some courage for Johnson for supporting the package, despite the fact it may impact his position as Speaker. Why did Mike Johnson support the package so strongly?
Well, listen, Speaker Johnson's in a really difficult position. I think that he's a lot of the times is spent fighting with the members of his own party. I think, you know, Johnson has always been a really conservative figure in the party and in the conference. But being in leadership, he has to take a lot of these tough positions. And he's been very vocal about his newfound support, I guess you can call it that, or his change, especially around Ukraine. He was talking about how his son is going to, you know, is going to the Naval Academy and how this really impacts him personally, and that, you know, that I think that he thinks it's important for the U.S. to be an ally. And I think that he sees that, and he's changed a lot of his positions in leadership, and he's been working with Democrats because he needs Democrats to pass a lot of these things, because he's not going to get the support from members of his own party.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Many of the members of the Republican House caucus were angry at the Speaker for supporting this bill and shepherding it through the House. Did he jeopardize his position as Speaker by doing this?
I think that Johnson has long been in a compromised position. He has taken votes that a lot of his members don't like, whether that's passing a short-term funding bill to fund the government, whether that's his take on FISA, and now the foreign aid package, which I think really hit the nail on the head for a lot of these members. But Johnson's in a difficult position. You know, I think that conservatives have really made it known that they're angry at him, but a lot of them have also stopped short of calling for his ousting, aside from three members. Of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene is leading that effort, but I won't say he's compromised, but we really, and these are questions that we'll ask today, but we have to test the waters in terms of how angry members still are coming back from a 1-week recess after that tense vote.
Okay. Okay, we've got to take a very brief break to let our radio listeners have a four-minute vacation. We are going to continue, though, with our viewers on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube with this interview with Mika Sola, who is a congressional reporter for Punchbowl News. Don't go anywhere. Everybody will be back soon, including our radio listeners, and almost immediately for the folks watching on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. And by the way, in the second half hour, our guest will be Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist, talking about the plans for the Democratic National Convention in Chicago this summer. So don't go away. We will be right back right after this very brief message. I promise. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. Our guest in this half hour is Mika Sola, congressional reporter for Punchbowl News, who gladly taking her time today to join us, despite the fact that Congress is back in session today. We greatly appreciate that. Speaker Johnson has had his problems with his caucus. But Donald Trump is standing behind Johnson. Why is Trump so supportive of Johnson when many of the real conservatives in the caucus are out for his blood?
I think that Trump is reading the writing on the wall. I think that another speaker fight, the 3-week long slog that they had in the fall would be really detrimental to Republicans in an election year. I think Trump's focused on his campaign and winning this election. And I think that he sees that, he doesn't want the focus to be on Johnson. He wants it to be on him, and he wants it to be on Republicans focusing on winning these seats for Republicans. I think it's one thing that's notable on that is the opposition, the difference that he's had with Marjorie Taylor Greene on this, who has been one of Trump's biggest champions in Congress. And it's interesting to see her leading this fight, which the former president is not agreeing with right now. So the divisions run deeper than Congress, I would say.
Okay. Now, Congress has dealt with all the big ticket legislation, I guess. The federal government's not going to shut down. They passed a big foreign aid package. What's left for Congress to do, or will they do anything during the rest of the this campaign year, except campaign for re-election?
I mean, Congress still has to figure out a little bit on FAA, so renewing that. They have a couple more appropriations bills to get through. But overall, I think that we're really going to shift into campaign mode. You're going to see members out. There's about a 3-month period where they'll be here. It's going to be a lot of messaging bills, whether that's on the border, which House Republicans are going to try and hammer Democrats on, whether that's on anti-Semitism and Israel, which we're seeing a lot of members come out against these campus protests happening right now, these pro-Palestinian protests. So we're going to see a lot of messaging bills that are effectively going to be campaign fodder.
Now, do the Democrats have any comparable messaging bills that are the Republicans clearly going to hit hard on immigration? Are there any Democratic efforts along the same lines?
Yeah, definitely. I think House Democrats are recognizing that the border is a huge issue for them, similarly to how abortion and reproductive rights are hammering Republicans. We're seeing moderate Democrats become much more vocal when it comes to immigration and border security. There were two members, Greg Stanton and Juan Ciscomani, that took a bipartisan border trip last week to message on that and learn more about what's going on there. And that's really rare to see bipartisan efforts on this issue. But House Democrats are also asking the administration to do more, knowing that it's an issue that is going to hit home for them.
Okay. How do Republicans feel about their ability to maintain control of the House? The polls show, national polls show that the Republicans have a couple of points advantage on the national generic trial heat. How do House Republicans and Democrats feel about their chances to take control in November?
I think that House Republicans are careful about it. I think privately, a lot of them are pretty concerned, and I think House Democrats are pretty bullish about it. I think that we're seeing a lot of this play out, and you know, I think it really depends on who you ask, but it's definitely a challenging year for Republicans in the House.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you a question. Is if the Republicans do maintain control, and I think at this point it's a jump ball, I have this feeling, of course, my feelings often turn out to be wrong, that we could be in a situation where voters are so angry that both houses flip. The Senate goes to Republicans and the House goes to Democrats. But if the Republicans hang on to control the House, do you think Mike Johnson will survive as Speaker?
That is the question everybody's asking. I think it's very clear that there's a good chance Johnson may not be the leader next year. In Punchbowl News, we recently just wrote this big feature on how, you know, there's already members kind of jockeying around behind the scenes. We wrote one on Jim Jordan and how he's kind of playing up his inside game and he could be making a run for this. And we're seeing this too behind the scenes with Steve Scalise, Tom Emmer. I think those are the names that have been floated the most. But, you know, I think that that makes it clear that members really are privately concerned about Johnson's future, whether or not they're going to say it publicly. Very, very few, if any, will say that publicly.
How do the House Republicans feel about the presidential race between Trump and Biden? Are they optimistic about Trump's chances of victory, pessimistic, or not sure?
I would say the presidential race is a lot more bullish for them. I think that they are seeing some of the issues related to Biden when it comes to his popularity right now with young voters, voters of color. He's struggling with those that electorate as well. He's struggling with his own Hispanic caucus here in Congress, who are really angry at him for not taking a meeting with them after they've been asking for years and coming last minute as he faces a re-election bid. He's struggling with young voters when it comes to Gaza and the position on Israel. That's going to be hard for him. So he has a lot of political issues that he has to deal with. And I think Republicans see those more helping them rather than some of the issues that Trump has to deal with, which are mostly, you know, him just being generally polarizing and also all of the legal issues that he has to deal with, too.
Okay. And one last thing, the Republicans are already making plans for a Trump victory, including Project the Heritage Foundation is running a Project 2025 about, you know, what Congress can do to help Donald Trump if he wins the election. What do you think some of the highlights will be in the House if Trump does win and the Republicans hang on to control of the House?
I mean, I think then you're going to see a lot of action that has been stalled this Congress. I think you'll be seeing hardline immigration bills. I mean, the House already passed one last year that they wanted. Obviously, that was never going to pass the Senate and hasn't. But you'll see reforms on things like FISA, like the more massive reforms. And I think a lot of members are privately saying, yeah, they don't want to do anything on these things until Trump is president. That also includes why a lot of members rejected that bipartisan Senate proposal on the border and immigration while still decrying this as a crisis. So I think you'll see a lot of people move faster once if Trump Trump is in office.
Mika, thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciate the fact you took time away from your beat to join us today. Hope you can join us again. We're going to be back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and Kimberly Scott from Demlist right after this break. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. In this half hour, we're going to discuss presidential politics. Before that, I want to mention that we are devoting this. Part of the show is in memory of Cricket Gnome, who was killed by her owner, the governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem, for reasons unclear. But we remember and love Cricket, even if Governor Gnome didn't. Our guest in this half hour is Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist. We're going to talk presidential politics with Kim as soon as we get her plugged in. By the way, I wanted to mention we are going to talk about presidential politics with Kim.
I know.
If you want to read my recent column in The Hill on the presidential race, you can do that by going to muckrack.com. That's muckrack.com/Brad Bannon. And you can read my thoughts about the presidential race if you care to. But before we talk about the presidential race, we're going to discuss the Democratic National Convention, which will be held in Chicago this summer to renominate Joe Biden as president. And to help us do it is our good friend of Deadline DC, Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist. Kim, you had the opportunity to go to Chicago last week for a rollout of the convention proceedings. And what did you learn on your trip to the Windy City?
I have to say, I am so psyched. You know, the state party people, delegates, all this don't get to come together very often. State parties twice a year. And so when you have all these people come in, like the senior leadership of every state party, the senior leadership of the national party, it's like energy waiting to combust. And the enthusiasm around the convention, Chicago really is an ideal place. I mean, for practical purposes, because it has the infrastructure already, but it's the third largest city in the country. It's one of the most diverse ones. It has strong labor roots. And most importantly, it's part of the blue wall of states that are essential to winning the presidency. So there will be 50,000 people coming into the convention, which will cost about $85 million. There'll be 15,000 press, 12,000 volunteers. And then it really is, I've said before, the Super Bowl of politics, because it's the largest gathering of leaders and influencers and activists. And it's just really an exceptional opportunity. And that doesn't even get into, you know, the events themselves. So there are, well, 2020, we had COVID, but in 2016, Demlist did the calendar. This is a free resource, just like the daily column. And we had over 500 events on the calendar. So it's actually open now. It is free to everyone just to help promote their event. Even if it's a private event, you put up there because you want to have the presence at the convention. I had a friend once submit an event that was called "You'll Never Get Into This Event" because it was just about, you know, we're cool. But you can submit the, just go to demlist.com and you'll see a calendar in the front. You can click on that. and give you instructions. So if these events will be from official, we're working very closely with the DNCC, Democratic National Campaign Committee, the host committee, which is the partner of the campaign committee in Chicago and is responsible for raising the $85 million and then also working as host of the region. So we'll be able to submit events as they happen officially, but unofficially, if, you know, meetings, forums, the state breakfast will be on there. This is open to everybody to use. People submit and then we vet it to make sure that it's legitimate. And it's just fun watching them all fill up. So we hope to have it populated enough in the next month to be able to get up by the end of May.
Well, what was the mood at the gathering of Democratic Party officials in Chicago? Were they enthusiastic, optimistic, pessimistic, worried about the presidential race?
Well, as I said, there's so much energy and talent in one place. And so it was actually very uplifting, I would say. But it's also very serious because this is obviously a key turning point in the presidential. And so we also talked about state parties. Let's talk about their individual plans, resources that the DNC are giving. And there was an understanding of the seriousness of the challenge ahead, to say the least. And it really is true that it's the most consequential presidential election of our history, I think.
It is indeed.
But it was a pleasure. Chicago, it's a great city.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. We know there's going to be all sorts of drama at the Republican National Convention because Donald Trump is the drama queen. There will be a lot of speculation about his running mate. There are a whole bunch of people who are considered potential Trump running mates, including the governor of South Dakota, who just murdered her dog, Cricket. I don't know if that's Trump sees that as an asset or a deficit, but we'll find out. But there'll be all sorts of drama about the vice presidential choice. And, you know, Trump, because of his television background, is a marvelous stage manager. He can't actually do anything productive, but he can put on a show. So there'll be lots of drama at the Republican National Convention. On the Democratic side, we know who the nominee and vice presidential nominee are already going to be. What can the Democrats do in Chicago to provide the drama that Americans crave when they watch television?
As it was even for 2020 during COVID, it's going to be a true show. I mean, if you're professionally put together, it's a great team in Chicago. Mignon Moore, who one of the most experienced and well-regarded veterans in politics, as the chair, Alex Hornbrook, is the exceptionally competent as the director. And these people have a lot of experience in politics. And so they're going to be prepared what may happen. I mean, as far as anything that's negative, of course, there's lots of talk about the protests over the Israel-Hamas war. And I think, again, Chicago has the infrastructure to handle that. We'll have to see where that is in 4 months. I believe there'll be in some resolution. But I think the enthusiasm is, you know, now Trump's the nominee. So that shifts things on a number of levels, but it's also a reality check to people that this is a rematch. You know, I think that abortion and the not only the Dobbs decision, but by the Supreme Court, but every other day, some state that is imposing restrictions on women's reproductive rights. A constant reminder, and it got us through 2022, and I think it is going to be a key factor in determining the outcome of this election.
Do you, I have visions, and I hope I'm wrong, college campuses all across the country are in chaos right now because of the Gaza demonstrations. Should I be worried about visions of Chicago 1968 and the Vietnam War when the convention starts?
Well, everybody's playing to that. You know, Chicago has actually hosted more conventions than any city in history. I was part of staff in 96. They're playing on that as a matter of, you know, leading up to the suspense of the convention. But again, I think we don't know what's going to happen. And it's just under 4 months. Again, let's hope for everyone's sake that some of the situation will have been resolved.
Yeah, let's hope that. But we have to go to a break right now. We'll be back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and with Kimberly Scott, the publisher of Demlist, right after this short break. For our radio listeners, we're going to continue the interview with the folks watching on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and our patient radio listeners. We're glad to have you back. And by the way, if you're listening to us and you want to watch us as well, there are all sorts of ways you can do it. You can do it at twitter.com/Brad Bannon. You can watch us on facebook.com/DeadlineDC with Brad Bannon. /videos. When we interrupted Kim, she was talking about fundraising. Let me ask you a question about the fundraising. Is it clear? I know it's hard to figure this out and maybe unfigurable, but does one party have an advantage over the other party in anticipated spending by super PACs? Joe Biden has raised a lot more money than Donald Trump has. But are there any indications that the super PAC expenditures by third parties will favor one party or another?
I think they'll certainly be, again, record-breaking as far as the amounts that will go on. I think traditionally you look more to Republicans for that, but the same time, the sophistication of these operations on the Democratic side are exceptional. I mean, we really have veterans of tremendous talent and from all who are contributing to these, not just financially, but, you know, and managing these. As I said, I think it's the media I look forward to seeing the most. But then you're also, again, there's this overlay of course, of the Senate and the House and where all that targeted money is going. You know, the states I just mentioned where fortunately all of the Democratic candidates are doing very well in fundraising, out-fundraising their opponents, are gonna be our key targets. And so we can look to those battleground states. I was about to say before, and it's worth actually reading the number, because not only does it factor into the presidential, but these people don't always get all the credit. So in the House alone, and you remember, and this may also be a reflection of another thing that is a motivator, is that the chaos of the House under the Republicans that is just so barely laid out for everybody, all the individual drama and the negativity towards that is not helping the Republicans on a national level. But the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee outraised the Republican Campaign Committee by $12 million this past quarter. And on average, highly competitive House districts raised, if you're Democrat, $890,000 and almost $300,000 less Republicans. So the top 20, top targeted battleground congressional races, only two, for those that raised the most, only two of those were Republican.
Okay. Let's talk more about the presidential race. I wrote a column for The Hill that came online on Friday, and it's still there if you want to see it. If you want to read my take on the presidential race, you can read it by going to muckrack.com. That's muckrack, all one word, muckrack.com/Brad Bannon. Now, basically, the argument, if you look at the national polls, we're talking about a very close race nationally. And however, the devil's in the details. Bloomberg News just polled in 7 states they consider battleground states. And in 4 of them, Arizona, Nevada, North Carolina, and Georgia, Donald Trump was ahead in all 4 of those states by at least 6 points. He was ahead in North Carolina by 14, I think 10 in Nevada, 8 in Arizona. In the other 3 battleground states, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, it was a dead heat. Now that tells me, and it amazes me, and I said this in the article, I can't believe this is a competitive presidential race, given everything that Donald Trump has
everything,
done.
Everything that Joe Biden has achieved. But Trump by himself is enough.
And, you know, I mean, it's just a very bleak picture, especially in the battleground states. And I saw the Bloomberg poll last week. I was so shocked by it, I decided to write about it. And, I have real worries about the outcome of the presidential race. You know, I remember back in 2016, I kept looking at numbers, and I kept looking at the numbers.
Particularly the last
ones. Hillary Clinton's in real trouble here. But then after looking at the numbers, I would say to myself, voters would never elect Donald Trump president. And it just can't happen. Well, I learned my lesson. I'm going by the numbers now, and the numbers make me very nervous. What's your take on the presidential race, Kim?
Well, I think we've been dealing with this all along. I mean, once it became clear that Trump was running again and that it was likely going to be, you know, a rematch with them, the numbers haven't changed that much. Now, like you, I'm surprised and dismayed that Joe Biden is not getting credit for, sorry, the sounds of Capitol Hill, for all that he has accomplished. But I, certainly isn't a technical answer, but I still have faith in the voters. I look to...
I did too in 2016.
I know. I think we were probably crying on the phone together. But look at 2022. And again, I go back to Dobbs. And a lot of these states and the key battleground states, there's also going to be ballot initiatives that will help pull people out, motivate them to vote where they wouldn't. A number of them are regarding reproductive rights. Some are regarding election protection. And I never underestimate those. But as I was saying, 2022, so these numbers the same as they are now. I mean, you know, Biden's underwater. We were supposed to have the big red wave and nothing happened. And I think it's because of these issues. You know, economy is always the first one, but the second one of concern to the voters was it like 27% was abortion rights. And the third one was threat to our democracy. And so I have faith that they're going to go in the booth and, hopefully both in the interest of the United States, but it will be close. But I have to look at the pattern. I have to hope for the people. And I think one other thing is that I do think things are turning around, even despite what you said with Bloomberg. I think the State of the Union was a turning point for Biden. That's reflected in the money as well that's coming in and the grassroots support. But I don't know that we'll see such a difference in these polls one way or another between now and November. Certainly not enough to count on them.
Let me ask you about this. One of the things that Bloomberg reported about the battleground polls is, and this completely mystifies me, and I do not understand, and I'm desperate for an answer to this question because I've tried to figure it out. I don't know, is in the battleground states as a whole, only 35% of the voters gave the president a positive job performance rating, which completely mystifies me. The voters in the battleground state even thinks unemployment still a serious problem. And he's created, the man's created 15 million, more than 15 million jobs.
I know.
Why is that message not getting through?
Well, there's a reason they're called battleground states also. Okay. And that's part of it. I think that the feeling is the messaging that's coming out of the campaign. I do, again, feel like there's been a turning point, but it's just not resonating with the voters. And so it's what we have to do to get to them on a one-on-one basis in our messaging, our media, our mail. It's all essential. And of course, of those independent voters, of which there are more than there have been in the past. But again, that's why they're battleground.
Okay. And again, if you'd like to read my take on the presidential race, you can check it out at muckrack.com/Brad Bannon. If you want to check out Demlist, Kim will tell you how to access Demlist.
Just sign up at www.demlist.com. It is free to sign up. I do not sell the list, so it's private, but then you can get the column. I'll be doing convention updates probably every 2 weeks. And then, of course, there's the calendar.
Okay. I want to thank both our guests today, Kim and also Mika Solna from Punch Bowl News. We'll be back Monday with a new set of great guests. In the meantime, stand tall and stay strong in these troubled and turbulent times. This is Deadline DC with Brad Bannon, and I'm signing out and look forward to seeing you all again next week. Monday at 3 p.m. live, the podcast anytime.